What is up, everybody? Welcome to the very first edition of our brand new show, Permadeath Weekly. I am your host, Bill Conway. I am joined by myself. If you are familiar with us, you know that I would usually have two of my best friends with me, Ken Ross and Ebby, and that would be on our monthly behemoth of a show, the Permadeath Podcast. But that is not what this is. This is something that is going to live on that show's feed. This is a complimentary tentacle to the monster that is the Permadeath Podcast. So I don't want it to have its own feed. I don't want it to live as its own beast. It is purely complimentary. It is something to populate and keep you busy inside of that RSS feed while we play and chug away at games and get ready to talk about them every month for the Permadeath Podcast official. So this is going to be primarily some smaller news-based topics, going-ons in the industry, things that interest me every single week. You'll be able to find it on the Permadeath Podcast RSS feed every single Friday. And I'll tell you right now, that's dangerous to do. As a man who has tried weekly shows in the past, guaranteeing anything is like signing and sealing something in blood and then skipping town. And then you have a ton of assassins after you because you breached. But I trust you guys to not kill me if I slip up, but I don't feel like I will. It's as easy for me. I'm sitting here alone, talking into a microphone, and also forgetting something very important, and that is introducing you, not only to this brand new show, but you heard some music before my voice started talking. That was our very first Permadeath Weekly Track of the Week. Each week, I will welcome you with open arms with a video game track that I hold near and dear to my heart. And this week was the Musashi Legend from the PlayStation 1 action RPG from legendary developer Squaresoft, Brave Fencer Musashi. Now, if you're watching this on YouTube, and I say watch very lightly because there is no video complement to this, but you will be seeing the box art for the game, the title of the track, name of the game, as well as the rundown of all the topics and stories that I will be covering on this week's episode. If you're listening through the audio device, sorry, you don't have that. You'll have to Google image search a copy of the game and enhance your experience that way. I don't make the rules. You know, things are as they are. So without further ado, let's get into the show. And I picked a hell of a week, by the way, to start a show based around news stories in the world of gaming, because we had the Google Stadia reveal over there at GDC. It's almost too perfect. It's almost like, you know, I was meant to make this. Now, this is actually like take six of this episode, because I'm of two minds of Stadia, and I'm of two minds of Stadia. And because of that, I tend to ramble about it when I speak of it. And it's a product that we really don't know much about. And the more I think about it, the less I feel like it deserves that much rambling. Because as a consumer, they really gave us nothing to work off of in terms of how this thing will be priced. You know, will we be buying games separately? Will it be a subscription service? Will it be a little of column A, a little of column B? You know, like, there's nothing for me as Joe Blow to go and tell people about besides it's going to be the Netflix of games. You know, like, as a consumer, they gave me nothing. So in terms of what I can go off on and ramble about, it's very little. So I feel like it deserves very little of that. But from a developer standpoint, some very neat things in there. And that's understandable. You know, there's been critiques on this presentation. You know, it was streamed to the public. It was advertised to the public. You know, not all things at GDC are streamed. This was. But it is still the Game Developers Conference. And it's there for developers to talk shop and make cool announcements on engines and storefronts and whatever the fuck else the industry wants to share with each other. It's a really cool event. But, I mean, it typically isn't for us as consumers. So it isn't a surprise that not a lot was shared about Stadia from the consumer standpoint. But, you know, given the way in which it was delivered to us, you know, expectations were there. But again, since there isn't a lot, in terms of me talking a half hour about Stadia, I hope I don't do it again. But, you know, there are some interesting things of note here. And the first one is, I'm going to talk about the goods, my favorable opinions of this thing first. And I'm breaking that down into two things I think are really cool, and then two or three things I think are murky about Stadia. And I'm going to start with the goods first, because I think in general, in terms of outlook, you know, there's that general desire to want to call this thing like dystopian or like, you know, everything's controlled by one hand and all of our games could be taken from us in an instant. It's, you know, it's certainly valid. You know, that's not an, and I'll get into that when I talk about the negative things, the murky things about Stadia. But when I talk about my positive opinions on it, I'm talking about these purely from a hypothetical scenario where all of this stuff is working as intended. You know, people's internets are working, you know, stability is there, Google servers aren't going down, all of this stuff is firing on all cylinders. With that in mind, this stuff sounds pretty awesome, right? I mean, the idea of instant access streaming is something we've lived with for a while now. So that concept of like, oh, this stuff's at your fingertips isn't really some new like, whoa, what? What did he say? Like, whoa. You know, because we've had Netflix and we've had Prime and Hulu and all these things to where we've had like that initial shell shock of like the whole world's at your fingertips, like that's gone. Granted, it's somewhat new in the landscape of gaming, and it changes a lot of things, and it changes a lot of perspective on how we consume and access these things. But the general idea isn't some brand new thing. So that's not really the part that's blowing my mind. It's great. I think it's really cool. But the things that are blowing my mind, the two things that I think show the most potential for me and the things that excited me while watching that conference. The first one, that game state shit they showed, that's incredible. Like, that's my number one most mind-blowing thing for this. I think that's very cool. Now, for those of you who watched that, who maybe didn't get what that was, or you haven't watched it at all, you probably won't understand what I'm talking about because I'm not really recapping the conference. So if you haven't watched it at all, I recommend checking out some articles or skimming the stream for Stadia. But this game state system is an idea that, let's say I'm playing Dark Souls 4 8 years from now on Stadia, and I'm streaming this game on YouTube, and I'm showing off this new weapon I found in the bottom of a castle. Say it's like Mondoku's fork knife, and it scales really well with a dex build. And this is a hard item to find. And everyone in my chat is like, holy fuck, you found Mondoku's fork knife! Oh my god! And I just happen to have a sick dex build already in the works, and I am slaying fools left and right with this thing. Everyone in chat is like, oh my god, I missed that item! Oh my god, I can't go back and get it! I really want to try it! I could create a link, a clickable link, of that save state of my game, of the moment when I create that link. Share it with those people in my stream. Now, assuming, I don't know how access to games work. Again, do you buy them? Do you subscribe to them? I don't know. But assuming these people in chat have access to Dark Souls 4 Revengeance, they can click my link. It opens up Dark Souls 4 Resurgence. And they can play from where I created that link. And then continue the game there from there. They can try out my Mondoku's Fork Knife dex build. That's incredible. Like, that's legitimately off the wall awesome. And such a neat innovation in the way that we share these experiences. Like, that's one of the moments in that conference where I bought into their shitty Silicon Valley, like, we are going to blow your minds. I was like, yeah, you did with that one. That's a feature that blows my mind. And that's like the power of this cloud shit and the way that these games are stored and streamed to us. That potential of, like, I suck at this game, but, you know, I'm doing well, but I can't beat this one boss. My friend happens to be an expert. Let me send him my game state link, have him beat this for me, and then have him send a refreshed link with that progress completed. That's sick. And that also creates like a really cool community around sharing these things with people. You know, sharing builds in RPG games, sharing save states, you know, and just sharing like, wow, look at this bug. Create link. Look. You know? That could potentially open up a door to a new type of bug reporting. You know, create a link, because sometimes it's hard for developers to replicate a bug. You know, in this instance, you could potentially create a link to you experiencing that bug in that moment. Create that game state link, send it to the bug feedback form or whatever, and have the devs open it up and check it out. That's radical. That's like a real big game changer to me. Like, that's the biggest takeaway I have from it, was that game state shit. I'm excited about that. Very cool idea. The other thing was just this general idea that developers are no longer limited by like a stagnating box. And what I mean by that is I don't mean to sound insulting, because I love consoles. I love console generations. It's really great. You know, I love upgrading PC hardware. But, like, you put out a PlayStation 4, and that PlayStation 4's hardware, I mean, up until this gen, we had their mid-gen refresh. But traditionally, you're kind of stuck with that box, right? And then developers have to design games based around that. Whereas you're using Google's hyper centers over there at Google HQ, their things are running with flops on flops on flops over there that are like, what, like 10 times more powerful than whatever we've got now combined, whatever they're talking about on stage. That stuff I don't really understand, so I'm not going to pretend to. But that means that developers can make games that aren't confined to a generational iteration. They could work within this power confine that doesn't stop them. You know, and I think that's really neat and creates an instance where we aren't constantly hindered at the end of a generation of, man, could you imagine if this game just came out a few months later on the PlayStation 5, you know, or these early gen ports and all this stuff, you know, worrying about backwards compatibility. Everything just kind of exists on Stadia, and there's nothing to worry about when it comes to platform. That's cool. That's super cool. That's one of those freeing things with this. And that's one of those, you know, I look at that in a very optimistic light. And I'm sure for devs, that's cool. If it works the way Google says. And again, talking about the positives, assuming everything works. That's how I'm doing this. That's the lens I'm looking at it through. That's exciting to me as well. You know, because you always worry, you know, one of the biggest things is like, oh man, so-and-so just bought the PlayStation 4, but the PlayStation 5 comes out in like a month. He still has tons of great games to play, but it's like there will always be somebody being left behind. And it's due to the nature of devs needing more legroom to make these games. You know, generations are a necessity. Generation leaps are a necessity after a while. You can't keep devs locked up on a box forever, on the same box for too many years. You know, their creativity gets stifled. But this has some cool potential, you know? You know, beyond just instant access and playing it on any device. That's neat. Now, onto my negatives of this thing. My first one is, man, what the fuck was that NPC RPG line from Google CEO? Dude, who knows? Everyone knows the difference between an RPG and an NPC. NPC is not even a game, dude. What the hell are you saying? That was that moment when the CEO of Google, for those of you who maybe not didn't watch it, he was introducing Phil Harrison, who's like, I guess, like the guy, like the game guy working on Stadia, because the Google guy came out and was like, I don't know anything about games, but I love FIFA. Oh, well, RPG? What's an NPC? And then introduced the guy who knows what he's talking about. It was like they jammed 30 years of video game press conferences through a meat grinder. And, like, mash that into a patty. And that was that moment. It was like, you kind of looked at it and, like, felt bad for the guy. You kind of cringed. You maybe chuckled. But I was like, what the? Oh, God. You know, it was nasty. It was grimy. It was a grimy moment. But that has nothing to do with Stadia itself. That's just video game press conferences. From a company who doesn't typically do video game press conferences. But no, you know, the main thing I think on everyone's mind with Stadia is internet stability. You know, it's easy to demo these things in a conference center that potentially is wired and Wi-Fi'd out the wazoo with a network that you are pushing the shit out of to make sure that these presentations go off without a hitch. And even then, it didn't. On stage, you could see GIFs and videos of some that lady mashing the fucking A button and having Cassandra from Odyssey just not... she's refusing to jump. There's such an input lag there. Now, that's just an unfortunate presentation hiccup, but that's on their conference internet. That's on their presentation shit, on their presentation hardware. You know, what happens when you field test this thing? And that's what I was hoping for the most, I think, was that at the end of this, again, it wasn't for consumers, but I was hoping at the end of this, maybe for the rest of the weekend or the rest of the week, give people access to that Project Stream beta that people had. Let people play Assassin's Creed Odyssey at home. People already got that, but not everybody did. I mean, the people who did, apparently it ran great. And that was the thing I was curious about. Because internet isn't amazing everywhere. And the United States, you know, as like high and mighty as they want to tout their big pecs, our internet in a large portion of this country sucks. And people want to say, oh, people saying that, you know, they're misrepresenting the internet situation here. No, it sucks, man. When you compare it to other countries and other areas of the country, most people don't have internet to stream on Twitch. Like in my city, the highest upload speed I have is 5. That's dog shit. And what you're paying for that upload speed is like almost twice as much as what somebody in a better developed internet area is paying for something 50 times faster than that. And it's a shitty reality to where our families, primarily most people who play video games, have families in their home with them. Multiple people using the internet at once. Are there home connections if they're living in an area like mine? Or, God forbid, living in the middle of bumfuck nowhere where they have to rely on satellite internet from some company named Grandfather's Best. Will they be able to use Stadia? Because that's my biggest concern. And it's everyone's concern, and it's been repeated ad nauseum as we keep talking about game streaming. Now again, according to people who use Project Stream, apparently it worked pretty damn well on lower internet connections. I have 50 down, 5 up. According to this article on Polygon from Chris Campbell and Chris Plante, they asked him, Phil Harrison, about the connection stuff. And this is what I wanted to see. This is the kind of information I wanted out of the presentation. But of course, they're not going to talk about their limitations on stage. They asked Phil Harrison, so generally speaking, this is the Polygon article, this is the Polygon writer asking Phil Harrison, so generally speaking, if I can watch Netflix in HD without any buffering, I'm probably okay to play this? And Phil Harrison responds with, the example that we use is, if you get a good YouTube experience, you'll get a great Stadia experience. So that's encouraging in a way, because, I mean, streaming YouTube doesn't really kill me that much, and I could run most YouTube streams, whether they're 4K 1080, without a lot of buffering, if any at all. The next question brings in bandwidth into account and data caps and stuff like that, because that's another concern. How much data will I be using? If I'm sitting home and I'm streaming and I'm playing, what am I looking at for the whole month? And how does that work if I've got data caps on my internet service? And Phil Harrison responds with, so with Project Stream, we recommended and set a threshold of about 25 megabits per second in order to enjoy 1080p 60 frames per second. In fact, we only used about 20 megabits per second, but we gave ourselves a little bit of a buffer in the calculations. When we launch, because we've made some very significant improvements to our encoder, our streamer, and our compression algorithms, we will get 4K 60 frames per second in almost 30 megabits per second. And then if you're at a lower resolution, you will obviously use significantly less bandwidth. So if they're using 30 megabits per second with 4K resolution at 60 frames per second, that makes 1080p 60 frames potentially doable on a connection like mine. But that's all well and good on a page. But this is, like VR, a product that you can't sell on a stage or in an interview. This thing needs to be field tested. It needs to be put into people's hands. That's why that presentation, as cool as some of that stuff sounded, and again, the stuff I mentioned earlier, game state stuff, the no box limitation stuff, very cool stuff. But I want to see this thing field tested in an environment that isn't a convention hall. You know, because playing it at home with a sister streaming something on Netflix, a brother watching an NBA game through the NBA app, or you know, a family member downloading something, you know, these are all realities of connected homes. Everyone's doing something on the internet, and you can't just ask people to stop what they're doing. So will Stadia work? I mean, according to Phil Harrison, if YouTube's working in that instance, you should have a pretty good experience with Stadia. So I want to take his word for it, so I want to fucking try it. I want to use the damn thing. That's encouraging to read. If that stuff holds up, you know, if Google's encoding and their compression stuff and everything is able to get us that data without needing to hog a lot of internet, this thing could work. But, you know, input lag and all that is a scary thing. You know, I don't want to play a game with input lag. I would much rather, if that's going to be the case, even if there's like a fucking half a second of it, I won't be able to deal with it. I would rather play the game off my own hardware, please. And that brings me to my next thing, and that is game preservation. We're already seeing the all-digital future thing kind of creep in. I'm someone who's embracing it very slowly. I really like preloading games, games unlocking at midnight, not having to go to the store to pick them up. The games are just there. And I've succumbed to the convenience of it, especially with the Switch. I don't want to fumble around with those fucking cartridges. But at the same time, the all-digital future is one thing. You know, because you're paying for a license, really, not the product itself, which is scary to some people. So what happens then in the future when you're no longer paying for a license? You're just paying for access to Google's shit. That is scarier for collectors than the all-digital future. Because, like, at any point in time, if Google just catches on fire, you have none of your shit. Nothing. It's all gone. And that's assuming the worst dark future. But again, you know, you have no ownership over these experiences anymore. And for somebody who has a lot of friends who are very into physical, who are very into buying physical games, collecting physical games, they love seeing the stuff on their shelf. I worry for them if this stuff takes off, you know, in 10, 20 years. We're already seeing the decline of stuff like GameStop, and yeah, that's predictable. GameStop themselves, just they suck with the times in general, you know. You can't blame digital 100% for GameStop being a piece of shit. But it's happening. Brick and mortar stores aren't going to survive. But at the same time, it's like, man, what a bummer it will be to not be able to just buy a fucking game, even if it's digital, if this is a thing. So that's a scary bit of it, man, you know. Every game sitting on one company's service. A little sketch, a little murky. But, you know, we accepted it with Netflix. It's you know, I was thinking about it the other day because, like, my family's been kind of selling off their DVDs because, like, nobody watches them, you know. And it's just a thing of, like, man, when a new movie would come out, you'd buy the DVD, you know. You'd buy that DVD or rent that DVD or whatever. I can't remember the last time anyone in my entire family, my entire group of friends, bought a physical movie. They either own them digitally, rent them digitally, or watch them on Netflix, or stream them, or catch them on demand, or whatever. I genuinely can't remember the last time someone walked through my front door holding a movie in their hands. And that was something, you know, and nobody could have dreamed of, but people kind of embrace that with movies. Games, kind of a different hobbyist collector's mentality altogether. I mean, there's plenty of people who collect DVDs and Blu-rays and Criterions and all those things. But I mean, games are like, it's come with statues and shit, you know? It's going to be a very interesting future to see what happens with that, you know, because it happened with movies. They still sell physical movies, but I mean, again, like I said, I literally don't know anybody who partakes in that culture anymore, you know? But yeah, so Stadia, interesting stuff. We'll see in the future what that holds. I am very curious to see where it will go. I told myself I wouldn't talk a half hour out again. It's 22 minutes in, but that's all right. I streamlined my thoughts a little bit better this time around. We're going to move on to the Epic Game Store. Some more news out of GDC. A lot of interesting things coming out of GDC this week. Epic Games talked about some details regarding sales of Metro on their store. And I'm reading the story off Polygon. This is from Michael McWhirter. But they also announced a slew of exclusives coming to the service. Now, the first big one, that'd be all these games, I believe, hold about a one-year exclusivity deal with the Epic Games Store. I'm not sure if all of them are 1 year or just the Outer Worlds. The Outer Worlds is that new RPG coming from Obsidian. They have a one-year exclusive deal with the Epic Games Store. It will be on Windows 10 Store as well. It's funny because this pre-order page is also on Steam. So it's like interesting. It's the same thing that happened with Metro, kind of. But along with that, the other big one, huge, weird fucking announcement, it's also coming to Steam, I believe, is all of Quantic Dream's games. The Heavy Rain, Beyond, and Detroit devs, Heavy Rain, Beyond, and Detroit are coming to PC, to the Epic Games Store. Now, Detroit's an interesting one. All of them are interesting ones, because I thought they were all Sony exclusives. And for the longest time, they were. But, I mean, I know Quantic Dream announced recently that they were going kind of independent and breaking off from that exclusive stuff, and people will be able to play their games on more platforms. But I was not expecting Heavy Rain, Beyond, and Detroit to become those games that they... I think that's cool. People want to dunk on David Cage a lot, but I mean, from a game design perspective, I think Detroit is about as good a is about as good a branching storyline game as you could possibly make. Say what you want about the story. You know, it is cheesy. It is fucking hokey as hell. But there's some really great performances in there. The Connor and Hank stuff is really great stuff. And I think that flowchart and the way that those stories and paths interconnect, I think it's top class in terms of story branching. Like, I think that's the best example of it that's ever been made in games. I mean, it's hard to argue that. You could dunk on the guy all you want, but I mean, people wonder why that game keeps winning best narrative awards. I think it's just because of the way you could change it up so much. It's so interesting to watch that game work. You know, take it as you will, but the other exclusives for the Epic Games Store are After Party from Night School Studios. That's the Oxenfree guys. Control is an interesting one. That's from Remedy. I'm really excited about Control. I guess I'll be buying it on the Epic Games Store. Dauntless, that's that Monster Hunter game. Industries of Titan. Okay, Journey from the Savage Planet. A bunch of indie stuff. So a lot of big gets. I mean, notably After Party, Control, Quantic Dream, and The Outer Worlds. I mean, those are pretty huge exclusives for the store. Now, I added this to the show because, you know, I'm talking earlier about one company kind of controlling things. You know, if all these games were on Google's platform, well, you know, what happens? You know, this I kind of relate this loosely with a red string in that PC has kind of never had this happen to it before. PC players have never had this happen to them before, where everything's on their platform still. You know, it's funny. We talk about this exclusivity thing. All these games are still playable on your same box. But Epic is paying money to have timed, sometimes permanent, exclusivity over games, adding it to their storefront. Now, I'm not someone who, like, whines about different clients. I generally don't really care. You know, sometimes I enjoy it because, like, I think Uplay is pretty good. You know, it's fun. I've never really used it until the Division 2, but, like, I think in some ways, Uplay is, like, better than Steam in some UI and just general usability. I think it's a pretty slick client. Other stuff I don't really use much at all, like Origin. I use it for Apex, you know, whatever. But I generally don't care, you know, because at the end of the day, I'm gonna make the desktop shortcut, and I'm just going to be about my day. But generally, you know, EA has their own thing, so of course EA games will be there, and Ubisoft, same deal. But generally, it was just for publishers. This is odd in that, like, they're basically saying, no, sorry, you can't buy these games anywhere else. We're locking it down. And it's rubbing people the wrong way. Because one of the nice things about PC is, like, okay, yeah, I can buy it on GOG, I can buy it on Steam, you know, or I could buy, like, a DRM-free yeah, you know what I mean? All different options, you know, I could pay through Humble or whatever. This is like, nah, you're using Epic. And I'm not sure how I feel about that, to be honest with you. I don't mind that these things exist on Epic. I don't mind using Epic Games Store. Like, I don't care about that. That's not a big deal to me. But it's an odd thing to take choice away, you know? It's like the devs aren't putting it there by choice. They're doing it because they're getting paid to do it. It feels like you're putting a gun to their head. Granted, a gun that's paying them more money than Steam. But it just feels weird. I don't know. It feels wrong in a way. I don't know how to describe it. I'm not one of them who's going to boycott some of these games because they're on Epic. I'm going to play these games. Like, I'm going to play The Outer Worlds. I'm going to play After Party. And I'm sure as shit going to play Control. Like, some people are going all out and just dipping out on these games. But I don't know. It just, for PC, for the platform that is typically so open and just, you have so much choice in how you want to configure your hardware and how you want to play your games and what type of display you want to use. It just feels weird to have one company kind of step in and go, well, if you wanted that game that you pre-ordered on Steam, you got to come over here now. Sorry, chump. It's because they're using money. I don't know. I mean, Steam ain't some angel, you know? I just think, you know, some people like having their shit there. You know, I can't blame them. I can't blame some people for getting uppity about it. So we'll see how that future goes, man. I'm curious what Steam does in response. I mean, do they need to do anything? Do they have anything they can do? I don't know. You know, do they compete with their revenue split? I mean, I don't know. Steam's, I like Steam. I use Steam. I mean, I can't really speak for how well their front page is, though. I think it's ugly as sin. So, I don't know. But at the end of the day, I'm just playing the fucking games, man. I don't care where I buy them. But people do care. So I wanted to bring it up because I think it's interesting, and they've gotten some interesting games lined up for exclusives. The next thing on my list here is something I wasn't really going to talk about yet. I wanted to wait because this story has been around festering for about a week now. And I wanted to wait until Sega of America made a statement. This is regarding Judgment. And one of their lead actors is Pierre Takashi. Let me get a name check here. Maybe I'm wrong on that one. Where is the goddamn name? Yeah, Pierre Taki. I was close. Pierre Taki. Was charged with possession of cocaine, using cocaine. And because of this, the way it works in Japan is you make a mistake like that, your existence gets scrubbed from your work. You know, you basically become a ghost. So Sega pulled Judgment from digital storefronts in Japan and Asia. They pulled all existence of the game from their Twitter, all tweets, all Twitter banners. The official website redirects to somewhere else now. All because the guy was struggling with a problem. And to me, you know, this comes down to, you know, a cultural difference between us here in the West and them in Japan. But it's one that I truly find pretty shameful. You know, it might not be my place to really speak for this because, again, I don't see it from their shoes, and it's not fair for me to maybe make a judgment call on this because I don't know them over there. You know, I've never lived over there. I've never spoken to a Japanese person in my life. But the way that this is handled there just rubs me the wrong way. Because basically what they're saying is you're a villain if you struggle with substance abuse. You're a piece of shit who doesn't deserve a career if you struggle with substance abuse. If you have an addiction problem, hey, sorry, bud, your work, it's in the toilet. And that's just something that nobody deserves because you don't know his story. You know, he's not selling it to people. Again, those details could come later. But he's not selling it to people. He's not putting anybody in harm's way. That man has an addiction. And you don't treat somebody like they are fucking Ragnaros because they have a substance abuse problem. To me, that is just abandonment of them as a human being. And it's sad. And it's disrespectful to their work. It's disrespectful to the developer's work. It's disrespectful to human beings in general that you villainize something that is very much a problem and not somebody going off and robbing a store or shooting someone. Addiction is a disease. It is not something that you shouldn't be treated that way. But, you know, it's okay. It's okay to be a pedophile. You know, you could be the guy who wrote Rurouni Kenshin and have your character in Jump Force. I mean, you could probably look at that in two ways. Unfortunately, your character is in a shitty video game. But, again, that guy got slap on the wrist and a fine. This guy has a problem that he's struggling with. And instead of helping him, instead of being supportive, getting him some help, putting him in a position to where he could potentially rehabilitate himself and succeed, nah, throw his shit in the trash. This guy doesn't deserve to be in our video game. Fuck him. Fuck this guy. Now, fuck you. It's important to me. You know, Hollywood over here is not perfect, but there are a few things in it that uplift people. There have been actors and actresses in the past where they have come back from substance abuse problems. They have come back from struggling with alcohol and drugs and found their career again and been welcomed back with open arms and celebrated. People like Mickey Rourke. You know, it's a thing where you get help for your problems. You don't get kicked to the side and then replaced digitally by some other fucking guy. It's just a weird cultural difference, and I don't agree with it. And again, like I said, from where I'm sitting, I have no place to really speak to judging them for that. But I will, because, you know, it's not something I take lightly. It's not something anybody should take lightly. Someone shouldn't be treated like that. Their talents shouldn't be thrown in the trash because they struggle with something and fell into something they can't get out of. It's shameful to me, and it's disgusting to me, and I really hope Sega of America stands up to that shit and puts the game out as is over here. I don't want that game patched. I don't want another actor taking that guy's place. That character is his, as far as I'm concerned. I haven't played the game myself. All I know is what I've read about that character and how great of a performance it was. You don't take that away from a fucking guy because he's struggling with something. It's ridiculous. It's insulting to everybody involved in this. The end user, the developer, and the artist. It's fucked up. It really bothers me. So I am waiting patiently for Sega of America's response, because as far as I know, that stuff hasn't been scrubbed from the American accounts. And as far as I know, that game, let me double check, is still up for pre-order on American stores. Yeah, it's still up for pre-order on Amazon. No idea what's going to happen with that. That's all up to Sega at this point. But it's fucking shameful, and it pisses me off. Not just because I want to play the game, but it's just a dick move. It's a dick move. I'll tell you what doesn't piss me off, though. And that's The Division 2. One thing I want to avoid with this show is kind of talking about what I've been playing, because I want to reserve that meaty stuff for the Permadeath podcast proper. But since The Division 2 is a living game, and by the time that we record Permadeath podcast, this game could go down the shitter by the time I'm level cap and playing the end game. I kind of like giving some early impressions on it early on in the game before I'm level cap and everything. excuse me, voice is getting hoarse. Talking by yourself for an entire episode hurts. but yeah, so I've been playing Division 2. I have about 25 hours into the game at this point of recording, almost a week later. Man, it's just a really good game. It just feels like a full meal came out of the oven and not a single course is missing. It is a meaty son of a bitch of a looter shooter. And that's a great, refreshing thing. Because this is one of those genres that just continuously makes the same mistakes. And it's amazing because the developers keep looking at the other developer making these mistakes, and then it's like they bump their head going back in the studio and fuck it up again. The Division 1 kind of dropped the ball the same way Destiny 1 did in some instances. They really improved that game over time with free updates, but again, point stands. Anthem went back to Destiny 1 and then reeled it in some more. What the hell's going on? Destiny 2. What the fuck? When it launched, repeated the same goddamn mistakes as Destiny 1. Now, again, I am technically still in that honeymoon phase with the Division 2. So I could very well change my mind on this game very quickly. Much like Destiny 2. When Destiny 2 launched, everyone was hype on this shit. Well, they improved everything from Destiny 1. Once everyone got to endgame, they realized how thin it was. Thankfully, though, from everything I'm reading from Division 2 endgame impressions, it feels pretty meaty. And I believe it at this point because they put a lot of emphasis on the endgame marketing before the game even came out. It was almost too perfect that Anthem bombed, because Division 2 really used that to their advantage in their marketing materials. But this game is just stuffed. It is a duffel bag. You're packing too many clothes, pal. But pretty good thing, because, you know, you could always use them. That's a bad analogy. That's the worst analogy I've ever made. And I had an analogy in a previous recording of this episode where I compared my thoughts of Google Stadia to a plate of food that I started eating, left it out of my room, it got cold, I woke up, took a bite of the cold food, thought, oh wow, that's cold, I should try to warm this up. And it made no sense. So I'm no stranger to that. But early impressions of this game, man, I think they fucking nailed it. I think this is the first looter shooter that really nailed it on launch. There's some bugs. You know, some bugs related to armor scaling and some skills not working. But generally, man, I mean, stability-wise, I'm playing on PC, by the way, like just performance-wise, this thing is just it's just rock solid. This is a rock solid video game. I'm really impressed with the setting. The Washington, D.C. setting is very cool. I loved the snowy New York setting of the first game, but being able to use Washington, D.C.'s museums as interiors really shows to display the creativity of these devs in making these main story missions feel so cool and different from one another. Because generally, I mean, you know, you're running through the streets. All these streets look like D.C. streets. You know, you got flip cars and burning shit and trash. But they take you into these interiors, into these different museums, and they're able to use these different exhibits to give you a variety of landscapes and different combat arenas to fight these encounters in. You know, like there's the Air and Space Museum, and you walk into the Mars exhibit, and it's like a giant fucking battle on Mars. And it's just so cool. When I walked in, I went, whoa. Like, that was awesome. A history museum. There's an exhibit where you're fighting in Vietnam. Like, and they render it out, and like you're in that exhibit, and it's immersive, and it's cool, and it provides a really neat break from just fighting through these DC office buildings and these you know, these government buildings and everything. Very cool stuff. Very neat setting. Used to perfection. Exploring the White House. Cool. That the White House as a base of operations is neat. You know, they did a really good job with that. It's a really good open world. So much shit to do. A lot of detail. A lot of content to see. A lot of side stuff. Little story, lore bits here and there. The story kind of sucks, but I mean, I'm not really playing it for that. You know, the president's there. The president says, like, shit once. And they're like, yeah, president, say shit. You know, in a time where our president says shit probably all the time, it doesn't really ring as cool anymore. But, you know, it was a neat moment. But yeah. I mean, what could be said really about a good looter shooter? You know, it's funny. We talk about these games and it's like, once you've kind of talked about the gameplay loop of one, you've kind of talked about them all. You know, oh yeah, you go in the main missions and kill a boss, get loot. Get loot here, you get loot there. It's a PvP mode, you get loot in there. You know, the Division 2 is very much the gameplay loop of the Division 1 just spit-shined and added to a wonderfully value-heavy degree. You know, you're getting your money's worth of this game, even if you just come in and play through the story solo. You know, there's so much content in here. It's absolutely fucking absurd. You know, and a lot of the game changes when you hit cap and unlock world tiers, and a different faction comes in entirely and starts undoing shit you did, and it's cool, man. I really can't wait to just keep sinking my teeth into this thing. It's a very exciting game. Highly recommend it if you like looter shooters. Now, again, full impressions. I will be at Endgame by the time we record the next Permadeath podcast, so I will have my full impressions on Division 2 and how it's holding up. But as of now, early on, it's great. I'm really enjoying it. Good loot, good perks on the guns, man. Like, it's just good. Really good stuff. So that does it for topics. Now, I have a weekly segment that I want to do every week, and I wasn't sure how this was going to work. I really love getting questions from people, whether it's through email, which you can do if you want to email us questions, for any of the shows, whether it be Permadeath Podcast or Permadeath Weekly. If you're emailing them for weekly, just include weekly in the subject. You can email us, at permadeathpodcast@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at permapodcast. Also, there'll be a link somewhere. You could find the link, whether it's on YouTube or on Twitter or somewhere you go, to our Discord. We have a channel there specifically for dropping podcast questions. So you could do that there as well. Again, just let us know what show you mean it for. But I wanted to try something a little bit different with a question segment, and I wanted to utilize the very infamous Yahoo Answers. Now, every week, you know, different stories and different topics, I wanted to get some up-to-the-minute responses from people on these topics using an anonymous account on Yahoo Answers. Now, I wasn't sure if anyone was going to answer these questions because I've never used a website for my own personal gain before. So I made an account, and I asked a sample question first. This has nothing to do with any of the topics. So question one for this week's edition of Searching for the Answers. Question one. I think my mom, who hates swords and guns, found my hidden Final Fantasy VIII copy under my bed. I'm hiding it from her, but I think she's keeping quiet about finding it. What do I do? Now, I got three answers to this question. First answer from L.A. Dean. Guess it's better than her finding porn. Yeah, and he spelled porn P-0-R-N. The leet-speak way to spell porn. I guess it fits in an era where someone's hiding Final Fantasy VIII under their bed. Next answer comes from somebody named Corn Games. Tell her it's more of a story about love and loss, more than it is about guns and swords. Thanks, Corn Games. My final answer, which is a creepy one, from Pete L. He replies, hiding places easily found by your parents suggest you know nothing about hiding anything. What the fuck are you hiding, Pete L? You creepy son of a bitch. So now, some questions pertaining to what we talked about today. And actually, looking at this list, it's just about Google Stadia. So I have two questions now that I asked. First, I asked a simple question. Because apparently, people struggle with this one, according to the Google presenter at the Stadia conference. And I asked, do you know the difference between an RPG and an NPC? I got three replies to this. Mark 9 just says yes. Good. Harry says an RPG is a role-playing game. An NPC is a non-player character. NPCs are present in basically all games, not just RPGs. Nice, Harry. Jenna, RPG equals role-playing game. NPC equals non-player character. So people went simple with that one. They didn't question why I was asking that question. My final question was a simple one, and it very much plays into the theme of this episode. Do you think Google Stadia could be the future of games? Or are there too many gamers out there that they'll create internet extinction? I got two answers to this. First one comes from Atomo. What? How gamers supposed to destruct the internet? Didn't really answer the first part of the question, Atomo, but answering me with another question means you didn't understand. The answer I selected as the best one comes from Raditz, taking a break from fucking up Goku. And they reply with a very sound answer, and pretty much what everyone's thinking and what everyone's talking about, and they've worded it very well. It'll become the future of gaming, but only when internet infrastructure is better, with fast, affordable, and without any bullshits like data caps, usage limits. Remember that 90% of the world didn't have a fast and stable internet, which is the main market for Stadia. So unless Google could influence all of the ISPs in the world to build infrastructures and change their policies to make internet affordable, Stadia will surely die on arrival, and it'll become Ouya 2.0. I maybe wouldn't go that far, but yeah, it's fucking true. I had some other questions I submitted for some other potential stories, but I didn't talk about those, so... you know what? I'll read this one. I asked, because Splatoon put out a demo recently, like a timed free demo, and it comes with like some free Switch Online time or something. And I was just going to bring it up and say, play Splatoon. I asked Yahoo Answers, do you wake up, look in the mirror, and instantly want to go back to bed, realizing you will never be as cool as an Inkling from Splatoon? First answer from Diego just says, nice question. Thanks, Diego. Next one comes from Stephanie, says, all the time. Third answer and final answer comes from Classy Goose, and they say, I don't know what an Inkling from Platoon is, so I am so glad I don't have those standards. You just don't know what you're missing out on, Classy Goose. But I guess that's for the better. Your self-esteem is probably higher than mine. So, that about does it for this week's edition of Permadeath Weekly. I hope you enjoyed it. Any and all feedback, please give it to me. Throw it my way. This thing being weekly, we're going to iterate on this motherfucker as much as we possibly can. Changes, tweaks, whatever it may be. Any suggestions for tracks of the week? I just hit my microphone stand, so if it came through on the microphone, sorry. I maybe shouldn't have even brought attention to it, because maybe you wouldn't have noticed it at all, or I could have cut it out. But now I've already talked too long about me hitting my microphone stand, so fuck me, right? Send me all feedback to me personally on Twitter. You can follow me at Peppered Ham. You can follow the show at Perma Podcast. You could hit us up there with feedback. You could also find the show on YouTube. Leave a comment in the description down below if you want. You could also find links to our Discord there. Come in, chat us up. We're there. We're active. We're in there every single day. Hit us up with any information, any stories you might like to discuss. Again, tracks of the week, questions, whatever. We have channels for that stuff. And as always, save smart, but save often. And see you in the history.